On Tech News Today, LastPass got hacked. Facebook shipped a Google Photos killer. And the coolest new Xbox game looks like a cartoon from the 30s. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Our co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. What's up, Joe?
Nothing much, Mike. How have you been?
I've been great. Today is a very special day here at Twit because we just launched our shiny new website. So if you go to twit.tv, you will see it in all of its glory. There's been a big crew here working on this for a long, long time, and Leo's going to go into to detail on this at 11 o'clock. So if you are watching this now, make sure you tune in at 11 a.m. Pacific time at live.twit.tv, where he'll talk about this redesign. Leo was, of course, heading up this redesign. I wasn't even in the meetings, so I'm not the person to talk about the design itself. But this is an awesome site. I really like it. And you just recently launched a site as well, Joe, so you know how painful and difficult this can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been interesting, to say the least, to watch some of the development that you guys have been doing. You've sent me a few previews here and there as you've been building this out. And I really love the clean design. I love the fact that I can get into the key images and the key topic areas really quickly right from that homepage. So congratulations on the launch.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'm really excited about it. Again, we've been talking about this and so on for months, so long, and finally it is here at long last. Well, why don't we do the tech news? Our first story, LastPass, which is a password protection service that exists to prevent hacking, got hacked. The breach exposed user email addresses, password reminders, and encrypted master passwords. David Gewirtz is a columnist for ZDNet and joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Now, what else do we know about this hack other than the fact that it occurred and that they grabbed some data potentially?
Well, what we know, or at least what the LastPass folks are telling us, is that they didn't grab the actual vault of passwords. They grabbed email addresses from the LastPass login and some user salt for the system. So essentially what they've done is they've potentially compromised the master passwords for the system, but not all the passwords that are in the vault. And LastPass does a lot of really good stuff to protect both the master passwords and the passwords that are entrusted with them. So really, the odds are that users are pretty well protected because of the way the cryptography that LastPass uses, but it's still worrisome.
David, how worrisome is this for the users? And one of the reasons I ask is I'm wondering if the hackers can now use all those email addresses for phishing attacks and actually look like LastPass asking for an updated master password, or is the system protected from attacks like that?
Well, they certainly can use it for phishing attacks for that and other things. They also may have gotten the lost password prompt. In other words, if your password is password and your your alternate password reminder is the password that is password, they may have gotten that information as well. However, on the plus side of this, especially for those who use multi-factor authentication, it doesn't really matter. For those who don't use multi-factor authentication, it could be an issue. It could be a risk. And this is the case with any password aggregator that's out there. One of the benefits that LastPass and a number of others do is that they provide multi-factor authentication as an option. Unfortunately, lots of folks don't use it, and this is a really good time to reinforce why it's so incredibly important to do so.
Now, you have to pay for that upgrade, right?
No, you only need to pay for multi-factor authentication if you're using like one of the USB devices, like a YubiKey. If you're using like Google Authenticator or something like that, there is no added fee. And you're also looking at all of, I think, $12 a year, if I remember correctly, for LastPass. if you're using this thing to protect your entire assets, your entire online world, it's probably worth the $12 anyway.
David, you write about security quite a bit and you think a lot about it. Do you think that this hack and the hacks that have come before, I mean, this isn't the first time that LastPass has gotten hacked, and obviously a site like LastPass is going to be a juicy target for hackers. Do you think that this suggests that putting all your passwords in a single place is a bad idea?
Yes, absolutely. But it's also how we have to operate today. I think the easier answer, the more appropriate question is using passwords a good idea? And we're reaching a point where passwords are becoming obsolete. If we're using passwords, if we need to use passwords to get to certain things, then something like a LastPass with password encryption and so forth is certainly a whole lot better than the sheet of paper on the side of your desk with all your passwords on it, which is what a lot of people use as an alternative to this kind of mechanism. But we really need to evolve to a point where the traditional username and password key value pair moves on to something vastly different, because that's completely compromised as a system across not just LastPass, but virtually all of our systems. Hackers out there have enormous big data databases of passwords, password keys, prompts, and even the patterns in the way in which people choose passwords, because they've been able to analyze so many passwords that users have created.
Yeah, it's sort of ironic. The hackers using analytics and big data just to crack all the passwords so quickly these days. So my follow-up question would be, you know, you had suggested that maybe we're evolving past the password era or error. What do you think is next? Is it some sort of biometrics? What do you think will go mainstream, particularly for the consumers out there that are just newbies to a lot of this technology?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, that's really the problem, is getting people to use all of these convoluted, you know, mechanisms to do so. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have about 50 Google authentication codes I have to hand type in. A few months ago, I read an article saying that it's possible that the smartwatch may be the key to this, because it's able to pick up some biometrics and it's able to connect to your body and be able to transfer it. We also have seen the fingerprint buttons on phones. But the real problem is going to be that all of our companies that do this stuff are fighting with each other. They're competing. So the massive challenge is going to be to get all of those organizations to work together to find a solution. And that's really where the huge effort is going to have to be, is to see cooperation among companies that normally compete tooth and nail.
Wonderful. Well, David Gewirtz, thank you so much for coming on the show today. David Gewirtz is at davidgewirtz.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at David Gewirtz. Again, David, I really appreciate your insights here.
Thanks. And also put in a plug for ZDNet at ZDNet.com, because they're the folks who are publishing all this stuff and providing a tremendous number of updates.
ZDNet.com, I've heard of it. All right. Yeah. Thanks again, David.
All right.
Bye-bye. More news in a sec, but first let's talk about mobile payments. Let's talk about Braintree. The very best way to take mobile payments if you have a website or you have a mobile app. Braintree is a full-stack payments platform that makes it really easy to accept payments in your app or on your website. And if you're a mobile app developer, you want to check it out, because companies like Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, Munchery, and more always use Braintree. And that's why they're so easy to use. That's why it's so easy to give these companies your money, because they're using this super simple solution. Braintree replaces the old model of sourcing a payment gateway and merchant account from different providers. They will handle all that. You just interface with Braintree itself through some simple code that you can implement in a few minutes. Braintree's continuous support plus fast payouts means you'll be prepared as your company grows from your first dollar to your billionth. It's very optimistic, but if you do grow that fast and that big, Braintree will be there to support you all the way. No minimum or monthly fees, no red tape. You only pay for the transactions you process, and they can process those transactions in more than 130 currencies. Braintree gives you a full-stack payment solution, support for all payment types your customers might want. You can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, and much more, all with a single integration across all platforms, with superior fraud protection, superior customer service, and super fast payouts. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNT. Facebook yesterday launched a photo sharing app called Moments. Molly McHugh is an editor at Wired and joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks. Now, the app sounds a heck of a lot like Google Photos, which was launched this month. Moments syncs pictures to the cloud, does face recognition, and organizes pictures into events. How is Moments different from Google Photos?
I think the biggest difference is just that Google Photos is much more of a, it does a lot more than Facebook Moments does. Facebook Moments is very, it does like two things very well. It will recognize who's in your picture and group them together by time or a specific event and tell you like, hey, why don't you share this with these people who are also there? That's about it. And it keeps those private. It sends them kind of in a message-like format. Google Photos is, it does a lot. There's the assistant feature, which does, it makes them into GIFs or panoramas, or you can edit them and, you know, place them, just save them for yourself. Just use like, you could use it as a storage center. That's not really what Moments is trying to do. I think it's a little bit more specific, but it's, they're both really cool. I'll say that. I've really enjoyed playing around with both of those.
Hey, Molly, in terms of the search features here, is it really people-driven search and face-driven search, or is it also objects and even if you get into like pets, for instance, dog breeds, things like that?
With Google Photos, you can do a lot of cool search stuff. You can search based on, you know, Christmas. I tried that one and got back tons of photos of holiday events, but not just that, things that were happening around that time. And then, you know, family, it'll show you a bunch of family photos, dogs. It can definitely mess up, but that element was really cool. Moments doesn't so much let you search that way. It's more doing everything for you. You really don't do much within the app versus send the pre-selected photos to people. You can unselect or add more people, but they kind of collect everything for you based on what their engine is telling them.
Now, Molly, sometime after Facebook launched its Messenger app, they removed the Messenger functionality from the regular Facebook app, essentially forcing you to use the app. Now they're bragging about how many users they have for the app. Do you think Facebook is likely to do something like this with their photo features in the mobile app version of Facebook once this app is established?
I wouldn't be terribly surprised if that happened. I know that a lot of the photos going to Facebook are coming from the mobile app anyway. We don't do a lot of, you know, importing our photos and manually uploading them once we're at a desktop computer. That's, you know, if you're going to do that, you're probably heading somewhere like Flickr instead. So I wouldn't be too surprised to see Facebook Photos become its own kind of standalone application. They haven't said anything about this, of course, so it's hard to say, but I think this is definitely a little bit of a tiptoe into that area.
Very quickly, Molly, what are you going to use for photos?
I haven't really played around with Google Photos too much on mobile. I was getting about 22 notifications a day, so I quit that one. I'll have to dive a little deeper into turning off some of that stuff. On the web, it's really cool. I'll probably use Facebook Moments to share stuff with people when we go to events. I really do hate the, hey, can you send me that photo or tag me in that one later? It kind of solves that problem.
I think everything always comes back to the fact that everybody's on Facebook, and therefore, if you're going to take photos and share them with everybody, then you have to use Facebook's app and so on, although you can share to Facebook from Google Photos. Molly McHugh is at Wired.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at I am Molly McHugh. McHugh is spelled M-C-H-U-G-H. Thank you so much for joining us today, Molly.
Thanks a lot, guys. All right.
SpaceX announced a competition yesterday to design pods for Elon Musk's Hyperloop transportation system. The prototypes will be tested at SpaceX's Hawthorne, California headquarters in about a year. Let's take a look at a promotional video. All right. You blinked, you missed it. Tia Ghosh is a senior writer for Life Science and joins us now to talk about this whole project. Welcome to you, Tia.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's very nice for you to be here as well. Now, before we talk about the contest, can you describe what the Hyperloop idea is all about?
Yeah. So basically, I think Elon Musk described it once pretty aptly as a cross between a Concorde, like the super fast plane that no longer runs, a railgun, and an air hockey table. So basically, there's a giant tube and these little pods inside of it go on a cushion of air super fast. And because it's low pressure, it doesn't have the same issues of, you know, drag at enormous speeds that you would have with something in ordinary atmospheric pressure. So it's a very cool idea, very futuristic. Whether it will work, that's the big question.
Tia, just how futuristic is this? Is this a long ways off or is it near term? And then what about this contest? Is this like crowdsourcing, for instance?
I think that this is doable, but it's definitely at least 10 years off. I can't imagine that they could figure out all the problems. I mean, just buying all that land, I mean, would be such a huge issue in California. I mean, they were proposing a big high-speed rail line, and they had trouble even getting rights for all the land with the government involved. So I think it's a long-term issue. I think the crowdsourcing, maybe that's a good way to think of it. He's basically trying to spur enough interest and get enough people involved that you get new ideas and accelerate development beyond just like some of the private companies that are involved in development. And it seems like a great idea, personally, I think. So
I have no doubt whatsoever that Elon Musk and his army of engineers can figure out the technical details of this and make it awesome. What I do doubt is whether they can get the rights to use all that land in California. Yeah. I mean, if you want to paint your house in a lot of cities in California, it's like 4 years of begging this local council and so on. And this thing has some really interesting technical limitations. For example, it can't really turn corners, can it? I mean, they're looking for a straight shot straight to LA. Is this ever going to happen based on the, you know, land use issue?
Those are some of the things I find very troubling. I mean, just the idea that if there's a tiny kink, let's say there's a small earthquake, all of a sudden the tube's non-functional. Somebody could shoot a hole in it. You've lost the low pressure. And it's just one straight shot. So if anything's wrong at one point, the whole system is down. So I'm not sure how they will get around those problems. And I think the bigger issue is that maybe it would be feasible to create one of these, but can you do it cheaply? And there are all sorts of other futuristic technologies coming down the pike. Like, you know, flying cars are, I think, actually coming up soon. Self-driving cars are coming up soon. All of those different technologies will compete with something like this. So we're not just talking about, you know, sitting in traffic on I-5. That's not going to be the only option, or taking a plane, I think, in 20 years. So,
hey Tia, two-part follow-up for you. Number one, does this have to be limited to California? Like, have they considered doing this in an area like Florida, where there's a lot of land available, and a company like Disney might be interested?
I mean, I think a lot of it is all economics. I think they've thought about it for things that are, you know, between 900 miles and maybe 1400 is like the upper limit. But, you know, more like shorter trips that would be a pain to take on a plane, but not, you know, you need enough people in both areas that want to get from one place to the other quickly. So it's not going to be useful, you know, in places in the Midwest where there are huge expanses between tiny cities and not many people traveling between them. But maybe on the coasts, you know, there would be other cities where it would be more feasible.
I think they should take the basic idea and basically make a cannon out of it and shoot these pods to the other city and have a giant net. But that's just me. That's why they don't let me run SpaceX,
yeah,
I guess.
You could be the first volunteer for that.
Yeah, no, I insist. You ladies first. Tia Ghosh is at livescience.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Tia Ghosh. That's spelled TIAGHOSE. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tia. The FBI is asking for the public's help to identify people who've been cutting fiber optic cables in and around Silicon Valley. Henry K. Lee is a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle and joins us now. Welcome to you, Henry.
Hi, glad to be here. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. Now, where are these cables being cut, and for how long has this cutting been going on?
Well, Mike, it's been going on for the better part of the past year in various locations in the Bay Area, including Fremont, Walnut Creek, San Jose. And these are fiber optic cables used by telecommunications companies, usually stored underground.
So if it's underground, how exactly are they getting access to these cables and cutting them?
Well, Joe, the vandals, if you will, are using some kind of special tool to physically remove manhole type covers, and then they go down a ladder to access these fiber optic cables. Now, What we don't know, guys, is whether this is an inside job, these are vandals that are intent on some kind of malfeasance for whatever reason. The end result, of course, is that internet and phone service is disrupted.
Wow. And I haven't seen a lot of stories about major disruptions. How disruptive is this to businesses and homes in the area?
Well, I've gotten emails from people who have reported that their outage was just for about a day or so, maybe 2 days. Certainly not as widespread as a similar incident back in 2009, where it was down for a couple days at least.
So, Henry, I live on Long Island. In the early days of cable here, I won't name names, but some of the early competitors used to cut each other's lines, quite frankly. This is going back a few decades. Without speculating too far, are there any clues as to who may be doing this, whether it's rivals, whether it's irate former employees, or where is the trail leading so far in terms of suspects, if any?
Well, the FBI agent I spoke to says that the suspect list is wide open at this point. They don't know if it's straight-up vandals. They do not know if it's an inside job. Curiously, back in 2009, when a similar incident happened in the Bay Area, there were contract negotiations underway involving some of the workers as far as these telecoms. So whether that is part of the issue right now remains to be seen.
Maybe they should instead send internet packets through, like, the hypertube thing. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Henry K. Lee is at sfchronicle.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Henry K. Lee. Thanks for joining us today, Henry.
Thanks, guys.
All right. A bug found in most Samsung smartphones makes the phone vulnerable to being spied on. A security company called NowSecure made the discovery and did so in March. The company told Samsung about it, and Samsung asked them to sit on it for about 3 months before going public with the news. NowSecure waited 3 months and has found that the security flaw still hasn't been fixed in Samsung phones bought through Verizon and Sprint. They gave them 3 months, Joe Panettiere, and the bug is still not fixed. And now they went public with it, and it's a problem.
Yeah, it's not even a 0 day. It's a 90-day threat here, and it's still out there. But, you know, it's interesting because this week Samsung is making a lot of news with the Internet of Things in terms of building out beyond their smartphones.
Yeah.
And if they can't retain trust just in the devices people are currently using, as Samsung tries to embed hardware and software in more, quote-unquote, Internet of Things endpoints, they could risk losing trust with customers across a wide range of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they better get on the stick here for exactly that reason. I mean, I really think they have a great shot at the Internet of Things, but they have to figure out the two biggest issues. Number one is security, and number two is compatibility with all the other things.
All the other things.
Yeah. Well, in product update news, Google Maps has been updated with handy new features. One of them is a warning that tells you when the business you're navigating to will be closed when you get there. That's right. So if you're going to be somewhere in an hour and they close in a half an hour, before you leave, it'll say, hey, it's going to be closed when you get there, even if it's open at the point where you start the search. Also, searching for My Events lists your rental car, flight, and hotel reservations, which, of course, Maps just dips into Gmail and grabs from your Gmail account. Very interesting. Great features. As always, Google Maps is a really awesome service, and they keep adding these Google Now-like services. I get the feeling that Google Now is becoming this sort of pixie dust that they're sprinkling on everything to make it better. Well, another product update news, iFi makes clever Wi-Fi-enabled SD cards that automatically upload the pictures in your camera to the cloud. But now iFi is starting to support cameras with built-in Wi-Fi, starting with GoPro and Olympus cameras. No iFi card necessary. You will, however, need to pay $4.99 per month for their unlimited cloud service. iFi also announced Google Photo-like image recognition, surprisingly, so you can search for your photos. And the newest features are available in their Android app. Sorry, iOS users, support is planned for that operating system later this year. Do you ever use any of these services, any sort of Wi-Fi connectivity with any of your cameras, besides your camera phone, of course?
Actually, Mike, it's interesting you bring this up because we had a big debate yesterday as you were asking me for a photo of myself for your website.
Yeah.
We were scrambling around the house looking for anything decent of me, couldn't find anything, and it was all locked away in our digital silos. And it inspired me to say, we've got to get all our photos under order here and move them up into a cloud service. So I do have a pretty nifty camera from Samsung that is a pure, it's a Wi-Fi camera, it's an Android camera, but I have not linked it to a backend service yet, other than, you know, doing some shares with Box or Dropbox, things like that. But really managing my photo services, no, I haven't, which is pathetic on my part.
Yeah. You could just try Google Photos. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, it is so amazing at looking at certain types of things. I've done so many searches. I've tried to throw out a loop, and I couldn't trick it into giving me bad results. It's just amazing. So just resistance is futile, Joe. Just hand it all over to Google.
Yeah, no, I don't have to trick anyone to get bad photo results with my photos. So.
All right, well, in news you can lose, a new Xbox game called Cuphead is the talk of E3. The game is new, but it looks like a Disney cartoon from the 30s. Check out the crazy trailer unveiled at E3. So it looks like a silent movie with captions. Do my bidding and I may spare you, the devil is telling two cupheads. It's incredible. The animation. Look at this. It's just like cartoons in the 30s. And notice, just like that cartoon style, everything is in motion. Everything.
You know what it reminds me of, Mike, is the Ready Kilowatt.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the 30s.
Yeah. Isn't this amazing? The artwork on this game is incredible. Wonderful. Cuphead, don't deal with the devil. Coming to an Xbox near you. Very cool. Joe, you're an Xbox enthusiast, aren't you? You going to look into this game?
My kids probably will. I'm sort of aging out of the whole video game thing, I hate to say, and I'm almost going retro. I still have, I shouldn't say almost, I've gone retro. I've got some big arcade games in my garage and in my living room. But no, the latest Xbox stuff, I just don't have the time anymore, especially as we, teaser alert, continue to build some things here at After Nines.
Yeah, you know, what happens to people like you and me is we go into Xbox and we're like, oh yeah, Call of Duty, I haven't played since Christmas. And you go in there and you're in a direct competition with, like, you know, a bunch of people who are in there 12 hours a day.
Yeah, it goes about as well as a real war if you put me in it. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, you don't want me in that room.
Exactly.
Well, 12 hours is a limited, I think they're in there a lot longer than that.
Yeah, probably. That's an average. All right, well, our TNT fan of the day is Brad Kosher in Biloxi, Mississippi, who posted this awesome picture on Twitter. Boy, he's got a lot of monitors. What is it with our audience, Joe? They just have more screens than they know what to do with. Well, they know what to do with them. They watch.
That's an Internet of Things
show.
Right there. Yeah.
Exactly. It's Internet of Tech News Today things. Very cool. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your many, many monitors and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Joe Panettiere, what is happening at After Nines for crying out loud?
Actually, if you check in with us tonight at afternines.com/CEO, you can learn a few tips about improving your employee morale. And it's not just handshakes and back slaps. There's some great advice from Glint CEO Jim Barnett. And Jim has really mastered analytics and applying analytics to your staff and really measuring how they're feeling anonymously so the staff doesn't feel that they're being violated in terms of their privacy. Just go to afternines.com/CEO and check out that podcast with Glint CEO Jim Barnett tonight at 9:01 p.m. Eastern.
Very cool. Can't wait to listen to it. Thank you, Joe. We will see you again next Tuesday.
Always good to talk to you, Mike. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on your smartphone's podcast app. Of course, you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. Yeah, that's our shiny new website. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv. That's right. No more live.twit.tv. It's twit.tv. The live button is right there on the website. If you're ever in town, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience like these fine gentlemen did. Just send an email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on the social media site of your choice. Tag three friends and tell them to subscribe for their own darn good. And you can join our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and you'll find the community. You can follow me on all the social networks at elgan.com. That's ELGAN.com. Don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. That is the Tech News Today, ladies and gentlemen. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgan. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.